This is Jay Sekulow, an Easter massacre by Islamic terrorists.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Today our nation grieves with the people of Sri Lanka, and we stand committed, resolved to confront terrorism together.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
This is, by all accounts, an intelligence failure. Security services are responsible for penetrating local extremist groups, understanding their nexus to other overseas transnational groups, and then collecting intelligence so they can preempt attacks. And that didn't happen in this case. And as a result, we have almost 300 dead and 500 wounded.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, welcome to the broadcast, everyone. How many times have we said on this broadcast, sacred places during sacred dates are targets for Islamic radicals? We sent out an email this morning that said this: 8 bombs ripped through Sri Lanka's Easter Sunday in Sri Lanka. 8 bombs ripped through Sri Lanka Easter Sunday as Christians were targeted in at least 3 church bombings. So we know that's the minimum right now. As worshippers celebrated Easter, Islamic militants unleashed a coordinated attack on churches and major hotels across the country. By the way, hotels where they knew that there'd be foreigners present, including Americans, killing at least, now they're saying, we said this morning 290, it now looks like it's over 300, and injuring more than 500. Witnesses described the horror as they raced to try and pull Christians from church pews. Ash was falling like snow. The devastation is unimaginable. That's what all the reports are, and of course, that is the truth. We've seen this escalation in jihadist attacks targeting what I call sacred dates, holidays, and sacred places. Now, just last month, well, actually this month, we were at the United Nations, and we filed what's called a periodic country report. We do these to let the UN know exactly what we're concerned about, what issues we see developing. One of those was persecution from Islam extremists. It's number 6 in our report. It says Christians are routinely the target of Islamic extremists, and it's not uncommon for these attacks to take place at places of worship during major Christian religious holidays, such as Christmas and Easter, while Christians are, in this particular case, Christians from all over were in the Sri Lanka area. And this is what caused this. And we pointed out in this one, it was actually affecting Egypt. So that gives you the sense and nature of scope of what this is.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this was a massacre, and it was a massacre targeted at Christians worshiping on the holiest of holy days for Christians, Easter Sunday, in Sri Lanka, mostly in Colombo, but outside as well. 3 churches were part of the target. Another church, the explosive was, I think they just detonated it. It was found in a truck bomb, and it was just detonated. So this could have even been worse, but this was already a large-scale mass casualty event. Over nearly 300 people dead. The count right now stands at 290, including 3 Americans and people from all over the world, too.
Yeah, reports are saying now upwards of 300, unfortunately.
It's very fluid. At least 500 injured. Again, this is responsibility falls on Islamic terrorists. There are hints at Islamic extremists that may have been responsible who are connected to ISIS.
Including extremists who are based in Sri Lanka.
That's right.
A group called Tawhid Jamaat. And they're an Islamic sect out of Sri Lanka, so these could have been Sri Lankan nationals. It looks like they were Sri Lankan nationals.
And I think it all goes to, a lot of this, of course, is the loss of life they want to inflict, the terrorism they want to inflict. But also on top of that, I think you cannot ignore that even the restaurants that they targeted were people having Easter brunch. I'm sure a lot of you did that yesterday. Maybe you went to a hotel. Maybe you went to somewhere to have an open restaurant to have Easter brunch. There are lots of people and people waiting for their time. They did that too. So they were targeting those celebrating the Christian holiest day of the year, yep, Easter. And while the media likes to say people were killed by Islamic terrorists, it was targeted at Christians. Obviously, other people got caught up in this, unfortunately, and lost their life outside of just the Christian faith. But this is symbolism. Attack them on Easter. Kill them on Easter Sunday, and we saw it in Egypt last year. We see it around the world targeting churches, but specifically on holy days.
Unfortunately, this year it's going to be the report. This year we'll have Sri Lanka added to the list. Again, your American Center for Law and Justice, European Center affiliate, filed the report. We'll be back with your calls, 800-684-3110, in just a moment.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
So about 300 dead, 500 wounded in Sri Lanka. Attack on Easter Sunday aimed at churches and major hotels across the country. We filed at the European Center for Law and Justice with the United Nations a report last year that included targeted attacks at Christian holy days against Christians at Easter in Egypt. Unfortunately, now Sri Lanka is added to that list. Here's what Mike Pompeo had to say about this.
Today, our nation grieves with the people of Sri Lanka, and we stand committed, resolved to confront terrorism together.
Harry, we talked during the break, but I think it's important to get your sense of this. What is your what's your sense? It's very clear that it's the targeting of particular places, sacred places, churches, on sacred days.
I think that's precisely correct. So it's important to note initially that this was the 16th attack on a house of worship in the last 2 years. Now, not all of those houses of worship were indeed Christian houses of worship, but most of them were. And these attacks have occurred in Egypt, they've occurred in Iraq, they've occurred in many other countries. But this was probably the most spectacular attack, and it reflects a worldwide problem, a problem involving the persecution and, if you will, the genocide of Christians. The ACLJ has been at the forefront in terms of mounting an effort to make more and more people in the world aware, more and more Americans aware, and we have, in essence, taken action with the United Nations, particularly the United Nations Human Rights Council. We've submitted reports. But I think all of the American people, every one of our listeners, should take note of these attacks and also remember the history. And also remember that this targeting takes place, as you say, Jay, on sacred days. And in the past, for instance, some of these attacks have been launched on Christmas.
Let me get Skip Ash, a senior counsel for the ACLJ, retired colonel of the United States Army. Skip, get your read on this situation.
I agree with Harry. It's a worldwide phenomenon. We need to recognize that Islamic fundamentalism, Islamic extremism, is taking every opportunity it can to attack and to try to create a interreligious war. It seems to me that this is the people who are perpetrating this are attacking Christians with the idea of trying to rile up the Christian West to respond in a way that's going to, they hope, raise up more Muslims for their cause and make this an inter-religious war of some sort. And I think the reaction of the Christians so far has been measured. It can't stay measured forever, and we really need to single out those who are perpetrating and planning these attacks, and those are the ones we need to go after. But also the Muslim countries and the countries that are somewhat moderate need to join us in this because they threaten those countries as much as they threaten the Christian West.
You know, it's interesting. Police said they discovered 87 detonators apparently abandoned at a private bus stand in Colombo. So this wasn't even have a broader impact. We have filed at the United Nations a statement. It's called a periodic review where we assess issues going on, and this lets us notify the UN what's going on. But then we also have the opportunity to make oral interventions, which is going to come in this. Now, last year the focus was on some of the attacks during the holidays in Egypt. This year, unfortunately, now we have to add Sri Lanka to it.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that is a very unfortunate that you have to, anytime you have to add another group to these attacks. You know, Bonnie on Facebook said, did their Facebook have intel this may happen ahead of time? Why no action? Yes, they did. They said that they're 10 days before they got an alert that this specific group in Sri Lanka was, in fact, planning attacks. This NJT, this localized domestic Islamic extremist group in Sri Lanka that you named, Dad, that 10 days before this, that they were planning attacks on churches and connected to Easter. That would be even hotels having brunches. And a place, again, the Sri Lankan government believes that that group must have had assistance from outside international jihadist organizations to carry out attack of this scale. Whether or not that is true, it shows you, I think it creates the image for you if you're just listening to us on radio or Sirius XM of how massive this terror attack was when you have multiple sites being attacked at one time, how coordinated and how planned. And I think in a place like Sri Lanka, these become very soft targets. These are not the most stable of stable governments. They are not governments that have always, I think, you know, it happened in India at well-known places by radical groups, and suddenly India became much more of a security state, focusing in on protecting these places of worship, protecting well-known hotels. You can't just drive up. It's not so easy to get into even the complex of a hotel. Places in like Nairobi are like that as well, following those increases in Al-Shabaab attacks, yet they still occur. They find another weakness. So you've got to, again, these countries have got to turn themselves into countries, much like we have and our allies who have experienced this Islamic extremism, into countries who put in the safeguards in place, whether you get the intel or not, that can slow down and prevent these attacks from being so successful. And unfortunately, for a terrorism attack to kill this many people, it is, I don't like using the term, but it is a successful terror attack to when this many people are killed. And it is one, if it can happen in Sri Lanka and affect the whole world, that tells you the scope.
So let me ask you this, Skip, as you look at these, and as I said, our international affiliates already have been working on this and continue to. What's the answer here? I mean, it's obviously it's intelligence gathering. It's understanding the nature of this threat. It's educating. But it's also the world has to condemn this.
Absolutely. And it's got to be led, I think, by the Islamic world itself, because this is a cancer on Islam. And this is a cancer that is not only destroying relationships among nations, but it's also destroying governments and putting governments at risk within the Islamic world itself. But the West also has to do something. The West has to recognize that when Muslims are allowed into the country, they have to be assimilated into the countries. There are no-go areas throughout Europe, in Sweden and in Britain and in Germany, where the police and the fire departments are reluctant to go into those areas because the Muslims keep them out. So we have a situation where we're introducing sort of a fifth column into our own countries, and if we're not careful and we don't ensure that they become assimilated and become Americans or French or Swedes or whatever, that we're going to be creating these little jihadist groups that are going to undermine our own societies.
Well, I think that the point of all this, though, is, and the reason we're spending time on it today is, besides the fact that it's significant and there's a lot of loss of life, and I mean, it's going to be, you know, 800 people have either been significantly wounded or killed in one series of attacks. But I go back to, what are they trying to, Harry, what is the message the Islamists are trying to say, we're still out there, we're still strong, we're going to continue this, we're trying to grow our network.
I think that's precisely correct, but I also think, in addition, they wish to spark a larger conflict. And so I think Skip is perfectly correct in his analysis. They would like to see a World War III that involves a conflict really between Westerners and Christians, by and large, and Islam. And so this is part of a doctrine, and this cancer can be spread through social media, and you don't need a large army to launch these attacks on civilians. So these were soft targets in Sri Lanka. In 2017, there were a number of attacks in Egypt on Coptic churches. So again, a relatively soft target. Unarmed individuals going to church on an Easter morning or on a another religious holiday. But the leaders of ISIS, the Islamic leaders throughout the world who preach war or jihad, they do not plan to give up. And I also think the West has to be very, very aware of the fact that we have created, at least in some Western countries, no-go areas. And one of the best books out on that is Douglas Murray's book, The Strange Death of Europe. And he outlines many of these problems, which have to do with a lack of assimilation. And without assimilation, you also lack sufficient intelligence to root out some of these terror attacks going forward.
What also has happened in all this, and it's important to understand it, is you've seen groups like ISIS who are no longer controlling territory. They don't have caliphates. So they're morphing into more like the Al-Qaeda model. Now, this, you know, was ISIS maybe inspired, not ISIS-led from what we gather. We don't know yet. But that's what you're going to start seeing. We got to be vigilant here, folks. People were targeted on a holy day, a sacred day, at a sacred place to cause terror. We'll talk more about this. We're going to talk about the situation with Iran and the announcements this morning. A lot of news to develop. But also, don't forget, we're in a matching challenge campaign at the ACLJ. You saw the ACLJ in action just with filing of this report that we did just last week.
That's right. The matching challenge month, whatever you're able to donate is doubled. Go to ACLJ.org. This is a great time if you're thinking about supporting the work of the ACLJ. The month of April, whatever you match, whatever you donate, we have someone ready to match that donation. But you've got to take that initial action and make a donation. That's all you'll be charged, and we have a donor ready to match at ACLJ.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
David on Facebook asked an interesting question as we're talking about the situation in Sri Lanka, and that is, how do we combat radical jihadists when foreign governments are not doing much, or in some cases doing nothing to protect individuals? Now, the first thing that came out on this skip was the Sri Lankan government's coming out and saying this was an intelligence gap.
Absolutely. They said that they had generalized intelligence that something was afoot, but it was so general that they couldn't figure out what it was aimed against. I think that's a problem with all governments. But again, you would think a situation in Sri Lanka where they've had a relatively recent civil war that they would be more attuned to this type of thing, because during their civil war, they had a whole series of attacks like this aimed at various institutions in the country. But let's keep in mind that the religious breakdown in Sri Lanka is very multifaceted. There's 10% of the population is Muslim, 7% Christian, the majority is Buddhist, and then they have a large Hindu minority that was the subject of the civil war. So I think the problem is there's still a great deal of mistrust in that society, and I think that hampered what was going on. But all societies, to include our own, have to do better.
So what do you think, Harry, when you're looking at it from, if we're going to look at what would be the policy implementation here that would need to go forward? Because I think what Skip said is right. Everybody has got to be very, very vigilant on this.
Well, I think Skip is correct. I think we do need increased intelligence sharing among nations, but perhaps more importantly, we need an increased willingness to act on the basis of such intelligence. We can no longer hold back and wait for the attack. We must engage in preemptive efforts. And thirdly, we need to target the leaders of these Islamic jihadist campaigns before they engage in action. For too long, I think the West has been relatively passive. We don't want to overreact. Well, my goodness, if you look at the attack in Sri Lanka, with over 300 people being killed, 500 people being injured, and if you look at the population of the country, which is around 21 million, that is their 9/11. In other words, it's an extremely significant attack in terms of the percentage of their population that they lost yesterday. So it's very, very important to take all of this activity seriously, and I'm not sure we have over the last 2 to 5 years.
All right, let me play what retired General Jack Keane had to say. Take a listen.
They had two objectives here. One, certainly, the Christian population in that country, which is the smallest minority in the country, only 7%. And they obviously attacked those churches and created carnage. And in the last year, there's been 86 incidents against Christians in Sri Lanka. And then the second objective were the luxury hotels. And why the luxury hotels? Because Westerners are in those hotels, and they, as a result of that, it gets global media attention. And this radical organization wants that attention.
Yeah, and also, by the way, there's reports now that Americans were killed in this attack.
Yeah, we know at least three were killed. And as Jack Keane says, I mean, you target these hotels. Those are not usually Sri Lankans, though. There would probably be more Sri Lankans who were Christian at Easter buffets, things like that. That's what people were attending at this time of morning, what was breakfast and special breakfast for Easter. The hotels around the world are always it's part of their job that they celebrate the various religious holidays of their potential guests who were traveling with them, Easter being one of those, and so they were. And especially international holidays like Easter, which are worldwide, and not just specific to one domestic audience. So you may not get Thanksgiving dinner at every hotel, though some will write happy Thanksgiving for you, things like that. But they will when it's something like Easter. And so I think that even when they try to say, well, some attacks were on churches and some were on these hotels, I think it's all the same. It's all attack on Christians, and the West is the focus. They wanted to, and now many hundreds of Sri Lankans get caught up with this because I'd said it's Christians and the West, and there are millions of Sri Lankans who are Christian. So They're the smallest minority there, but they're nearly 10% of the country. So millions of Christians there. So hundreds in this group of hundreds predominantly will be Sri Lankans killed, Sri Lankan Christians killed in this attack. This was an attack, whether it was at the hotel, Easter buffet at a nice hotel, or at the church, was an attack on the Christians and the Christian holiday specific to Easter.
All right, so I think what you have here is a situation, and I want to play again. This is Mike Pompeo talking about this. Take a listen.
What was supposed to be a joyful Easter Sunday was marred by a horrific wave of Islamic radical terror, bloodshed. It's heartbreaking that a country which has strived so hard for peace in recent years has been targeted by these terrorists. We mourn the loved ones of the victims, some of whom we can confirm were indeed U.S. citizens.
You know, Sri Lanka has been trying to move, Skip, over the last years to a more peaceful post-Civil War government. And I almost wonder if that's part of the targeting here.
Well, you know, it could very well be, because the Muslims want to create chaos wherever they are. When there is chaos, they begin to thrive, and they have a better opportunity to sort of guide where a society is going. We've become much more security conscious, even in the United States, because of 9/11. And every time we take more security, there is a potential impact on individual freedom. So we have to balance these things. The other thing I would say in this case is, let's remember that Easter's not over. Half the world that are Eastern churches will be celebrating Easter probably next Sunday.
Right.
So there are also other opportunities to attack on the most significant Christian holiday, and that's going to be throughout Eastern Christendom.
No, you're absolutely right about that. So for our Greek Orthodox friends, it's next week. Russian Orthodox, Syrian, Syriac Orthodox, it's next week. And the dates always are important. The places and the dates. We always say that. Sacred dates, sacred places. Sacred events, sacred holidays, sacred places. That's the attack. Then they throw the hotels into it because they can encourage more carnage is what's taking place here. All right, we're going to switch gears for the next half hour and talk about zero exemptions for Iran. Harry, give us like a 30-second version of what we're going to be talking about in the next half hour.
Well, basically, the United States is continuing its maximum pressure campaign on Iran. Recall, in November of 2018, we fully reimposed sanctions on the Iranian government. Early in April, we imposed sanctions on the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. Now we are ending any exemptions for the eight nations, which include China, India, and a number of other nations. And so I think we are continuing to bring pressure to bear on the Iranians and the Iranian economy. The Iranian economy is still cratering. Unemployment exceeds 12.5%. Inflation exceeds 40%. So there are real problems, and this will bring pressure to bear on the mullahs in Iran.
Yeah, I think, again, folks, we're going to be talking about Iran. So this is a whole new topic coming out. Just released this late last night, confirmed by Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo this morning. And so really dive into that issue with Iran and cutting Iran off economically with these few remaining countries, but big countries that were able to do oil business on the up and up with Iran. The U.S. says no more. Trump administration says no more. We'll be right back. Take your phone calls on that. 1-800-684-3110. Lines are open. 1-800-684-3110. As we talk about the maximum pressure campaign put on by the Trump administration on Iran. And we've got our matching challenge at ACLJ.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ.org.
live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Today I'm announcing that we will no longer grant any exemptions. We're going to zero. Going to zero across the board. We will continue to enforce sanctions and monitor compliance. Any nation or entity interacting with Iran should do its diligence and err on the side of caution. The risks are simply not going to be worth the benefits.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
So if you're taking Iranian oil, buying Iranian oil, you're not going to do business with the United States. And these countries can't afford to do that. So the United States is ending waivers for countries to import Iranian oil, part of the president's efforts to drive Iran's exports to zero. This is a very, very tough policy. Harry, you initially, when we talked about it just 30 seconds ago, let's recast it for everybody. You're talking about a not only stiff sanctions, but you're talking about a zero tolerance policy and the ability, this is an economic move, almost like economic warfare in a sense.
Absolutely. So this move places maximum economic pressure on Iran. Oil is the largest source of foreign currency for the Iranian government. The Iranian economy, as I've indicated previously, has been cratering with huge unemployment numbers exceeding 12%, inflation, exceeding 40%. And so the United States has given foreign oil exemptions designed to give eight nations, China, Turkey, India, Japan, South Korea, and Italy and Greece, time to adjust to the sanctions that we imposed in November 2018. Now those exemptions expire, and Iran will have to look for additional countries to deal with in terms of selling its oil, which will be very, very difficult because as part of the November sanctions, we've also imposed sanctions in terms of banking, finance, yep, financial transactions, shipping, and the like. So basically, the economic walls are coming down on the Iranian leadership, which will indirectly place pressure on the leaders going forward from the Iranian people. That's very, very important.
Some people are saying puts the Iranians making a difficult choice. Fact of the matter, this is not a difficult choice. If you're going to do business with the Iranians, you're not doing business with the United States. That's not a difficult choice.
You're going to face severe economic penalty and probably be shut off from the U.S. economic. Not probably. You will be shut off from the U.S. economic system. I mean, here's the countries that that got this. It was called a significant reduction exception. And so they were supposed to already be reducing and then get an exception from the sanction and from the prohibition on Iranian oil. These are the countries initially that got that. China, India, Japan, South Korea, Italy, Greece, Taiwan. Now, Taiwan is listed separately. Of course, you can get in a whole debate with China about that. But here's what we do know. Italy, Greece, and Taiwan have already come into compliance with this new ruling or will be in compliance by May 2nd. So they saw the writing on the wall in Italy, Greece, and Taiwan. It will be up to really, I think, the two. These are all major economic powers that are left. So take Italy, Greece, and Taiwan out of it. They're going to be in compliance. China, India, Japan, and South Korea better get their act together on this. Because remember, with China, we're willing to take this next step even in the tariff negotiations,
yep,
which shows me not so much how we're trying to get tougher on China, how willing we are to get tough on Iran with a maximum pressure campaign, that we don't care that this could impact China.
Exactly.
Because we are focusing in on taking down the Iranian regime's economics and really trying to undo the economic boom the regime received from the nuclear deal.
When we come back from the break, we're going to look at what does the Iranian economy look like now and what's it going to look like after this is implemented, which is now happening. This is... listen, we all want regime change. This is a way to get regime change without firing a shot. I think this is going to have a severe economic consequence. About time. Your reaction to all this, 1-800-684-3110. Of course, get your comments in by the phone, but 1-800-684-3110. Or you can get your comments in via Facebook and Periscope. We will look at those as well at 1-800-684-3110. So stay tuned for that. Again, I think this is a bold move. Zero tolerance. Zero exemptions. Maximum pressure impacting the economy that's already in shambles. What does that all mean? 800-684-3110. Back with more in a moment.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
States ends waivers for countries to import Iranian oil. What does that mean, Harry, and what's the status of the Iranian economy right now?
Well, first, the status of the Iranian economy is that it is in horrible shape, and you can literally see the Iranian economy shrinking. Number one, the unemployment rate exceeds 12%. The interest rate exceeds 20%. The inflation rate exceeds 40%. And now the Iranian government faces the prospect of a reduction in the number of nations to which it can sell its oil, its number one source of foreign currency. So this should shrink the value of the Iranian currency even further, and that will fuel even more inflation. Long term, this will place increasing pressure on the mullahs. And don't get me wrong, I think in the short run, this will strengthen their hand. They will engage in even more repression. But I think eventually the Iranian people will indeed react to this, and this will bring pressure on the regime, and hopefully the regime will implode. And so I think it's very, very important also to put this in context. We have imposed sanctions on the Revolutionary Guard, which has been a major force in keeping the mullahs in power. So I think more and more, I think the Iranians face a shrinking world with which to deal with going forward. This is a good development, and it's quite the opposite of the actions taken by the former administration, the Obama administration.
I'm going to break down what Secretary Pompeo said. So we're going to do it, and then we're going to stop it at certain points here, because I think it's very clear. So Mike Pompeo made a press statement today for the entire world. Let's start with it right now.
We've made our demands very clear to the Ayatollah and his cronies.
All right. So there's number one. We've made our demand very clear to the Ayatollah and his cronies. Who is he talking about? The Ayatollah, who runs the government. It's an Islamic republic. The cronies, including the Revolutionary Guard, or all those people that control those businesses.
Yeah, that's right. So when you're talking about cronies in Iran, you're talking about government actors and basically those who are run by government actors. So businesses run as front companies. Basically all government actors, these right. cronies, but sometimes done under different names. So Iranian Revolutionary Guard. That, again, I mean, when you combine by listing the Iranian Revolutionary Guard in total as a terror organization, and all that flows from that, which means aiding and assisting, which means doing business with any of the companies that you know are fronts. And by the way, that's pretty well documented who the fronts are for the Iranian Revolutionary yep. Guard. They haven't been that secret about it because they haven't been listed like one of these groups. U.S. businesses, obviously, don't do business with them. But internationally, you know, they put different countries. They flag their ships under different countries. They're known, you know, they run the shipping business in Iran. So the goods that come in and out, import and export.
Yep.
You are now aiding and abetting a terrorist. That makes you think twice before doing business with them. And now, you've undercut their biggest kind of, I'd say their biggest economic engine. That is the Revolutionary Guard. So it's like cutting out the workforce. And all of the all of the logistical right. work that goes into that, you know, the shipping, the flying in of even legitimate goods we're talking about, not all like right. weaponry. So you're cutting that out. So you're going to starve out the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. Now you're starving out the entire regime by cutting off their oil to everyone.
So it starts with we made our demands very clear to the Ayatollah yeah. and his cronies. Let me play the next statement talking about nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles. Take a listen.
End your pursuit of nuclear weapons. Stop testing and proliferating ballistic missiles.
Okay. So that's very clear.
If you want to get
End your pursuit of nuclear weapons. Stop testing and proliferating ballistic missiles. Skip, what is that? This is part one. What does that mean, Skip?
Well, that means that they want to do, we want them to do what we've said all along, and that is they will never become a nuclear power, and they will never be able to take nuclear weapons, put them on the tip of a missile, and export them somewhere else where they can endanger the United States, endanger Western Europe, or so on. What we want them to do is to go back to being a power with conventional arms only, and we'll take whatever means we have to achieve that.
All right, so that was very clear. Nuclear weapons, stop testing and proliferating ballistic missiles. I want to play the next one for you, which talks about what Jordan was just mentioning, sponsoring terrorism and committing terrorism.
Stop sponsoring and committing terrorism.
All right. So that's very important here. Stop sponsoring. We know they're the largest sponsor of terror. And stop committing terrorism. Because, Harry, it's both.
Absolutely. So if you look at the Middle East, if you look at Hezbollah, if you look at Hamas and their threats to the nation of Israel, this is a very, very important development. But also, we should not underestimate the fact that Iran still holds massive sway in Syria. And so one of the things that the United States wants to do is to shrink the Iranian footprint, terrorist footprint, in the Middle East. Also, Iran is engaged essentially in a civil war in Yemen. In other words, Iran wishes to increase its power at the expense of Saudi Arabia and at the expense of moderate Muslims. So again, all of these developments are very, very important. They operate in a stark contradistinction to the activities engaged in by the Obama administration. Essentially, when President Obama was in power, Iran was allowed to push against right. an open door. President Obama was so interested in negotiating the nuclear deal that he refused to follow direct leads within the Justice Department that would basically limit the ability of Iran to sell drugs and finance Hezbollah in the Middle East. So again, the Iran nuclear deal was negotiated in defiance of American interests. President Trump is basically signaling those days are over.
All right, let me play the next one for you. This one deals with detention of U.S. citizens.
Halt the arbitrary detention of U.S. citizens.
Constant issue. We've represented Americans that we've gotten out of Iranian prisons. Saeed Abedini is the example. But there are others.
Oh, absolutely there are others. Yousef Nadarkhani's been re-imprisoned again. We talk about that in our reports to the U.S.
National.
Yeah, an Iranian national. But, I mean, again, you see the targeting of Christians. There are a lot of who they focus in on in Iran specifically is anyone who could have joint citizenship with the United States. And so suddenly, if you do have joint citizenship, they ignore your U.S. citizenship, of course, until they want to trade you for something. And then you're not an Iranian. You're banned from the country and you're now a U.S. citizen. So arbitrary detentions, serious detentions. And I've heard, this is how I've described the Al-Quds Force outside of the region as described. So if you take them outside of what they do in kind of Syria and Iran and Lebanon, their focus as an organization is kidnapping. So they are a kidnapping-focused organization. Sometimes it could be working with the drug cartel in South America. Sometimes it may have no motivation for Iran geopolitically in the sense that it is done because it, they want to capture someone who's got an American citizenship, like a Saeed Abedini or a Jason Rezaian from the Washington Post. They don't want it to be them. They want it to be maybe it's someone wealthy in South America that a drug cartel also targets working with Al-Quds, and then they get a big ransom in return, thus propping up their other terror. I mean, you do kidnapping for two reasons. Money, and of course, if it's not money, it's to get into something, a trade with a country. So you do it for actual, a wealthy family paying you money, or a company, corporation paying you money to release one of their employees, or two, to get some kind of trade with a country that would never usually trade anything with you.
All right, let me play for you the last statement in here, very important.
Our pressure is aimed at fulfilling these demands and others, and it will continue to accelerate until Iran is willing to address them at the negotiating table.
Skip, you look at the pressure that's been put on Iran. They've never had this kind of pressure.
Absolutely, and they've never, under the previous administration, they were walking, they were in the catbird seat. Everything they wanted, they got. The president was so wanting a treaty that he was willing to sacrifice everything else to have a signature on a meaningless piece of paper. And now we have a president who says, no, I'm not going to engage except in a serious matter. We have serious aims. We expect you to come to the table and we will achieve serious aims. And I think that's exactly what's happening by putting the proper pressure on. Not only is he going to be reducing the amount of money available for the terrorism aspect of that society, but it will also put a lot of pressure from the population, which is already upset that they're expending Iranian funds on other causes.
We've made our demands very clear to the Ayatollah and his cronies. That's number one. Number two, end your pursuit of nuclear weapons. Stop testing and proliferating ballistic missiles. Number two. Three, stop sponsoring and committing terrorism. Halt the arbitrary detention of U.S. citizens. The goal, our pressure is aimed at fulfilling these demands and others, and it will continue to accelerate until Iran is willing to address them at the negotiating table. Maximum pressure. Economic impact will be great. This is a very good move by the White House and the State Department. Very, very good move. And then labeling last week the Iranian Revolutionary Guard as a terrorist organization ups that even more. This is a significant move to end this regime. We're going to take your calls on the last segment of the broadcast coming up at 1-800-684-3110. It can be on any topic. 1-800-684-3110. You can also get your comments in by Facebook or Periscope. But again, if you want to talk to us, 800-684-3110.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Lynn on Facebook says, what is the response to the decision, the zero exemption, no exemptions from countries like China? We hearing anything yet?
Yes. So China has responded in quote, this is from their foreign minister. China-Iran cooperation is open, transparent, and in accordance with law. It should be respected. So they're not happy about that, that this move. Now, this is interesting because we're taking this move against Iran that affects China while we are still in a trade war with China. I mean, effectively, we've got tariffs going on. By the way, how bad has that been for the U.S.? I mean, it may affect some industries. I'm not trying to take away everything. But in general, much worse for the Chinese.
Which raises the question, Skip, on because we're getting a lot of calls about the Chinese reaction. You know, like Lynn said, what is the China reaction to this? What do you think it's going to be?
Oh, I think they're going to push back a little bit, but I think if the president is serious about this and if he goes after more corporations in China that are dealing with them and cuts them off from contact with the United States, they're going to have to say, which one is the more valuable relationship? And they're going to have to say it's the United States, and they won't like it, and they may push back. And I think they'll be doing a lot of things under the table, trying to make promises and everything else with Iran. But I think publicly, they're going to have, sooner or later, have to come up and agree with the United States.
I think it's very important to note that this deal was done in coordination. It's not just U.S. unilaterally, but done with the major oil producers of oil producers of the world, Saudi Arabia and the UAE. So when you work with them, you're working with basically OPEC, which does not include Iran. And this is an important time. I say this because, look, if you're on live with me right now, you can go to Drudge. It shows how oil has spiked another 2% because there's been a lot of play about how much should they produce if you've got this Iranian oil on the market. How do we keep the Iranians from selling it at such a low cost to these few countries, but major countries who will do business with them. And the truth is now we've got gas prices in places like California hitting $5 a gallon. And even wherever you are in the country, if you've noticed in the last 2 or 3 months, it has gone up a lot, at least a dollar, basically about where I am, it's at least a dollar. And it's been just the last few months. When you can stabilize the market again and say, this is what's going to be on the market, and this is what's going to be illegal from being on the market, I think that helps the Saudis, the UAEs, the OPECs of the world to figure out a price point that is better for the whole world and better for the United States as well, because we're heading into that season where people spend a lot more money on gas. Yep. Summer season, travel season, probably started this weekend with the Easter traveling, right, that people did.
Exactly.
And then you've gotten past kind of spring break, but now you're in major holiday travel where people do the very long Chevy Chase style road trips.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and take a phone call.
All right. Right to the phones we go. Linda in Utah on line one. Linda, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Linda.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I was just curious. I haven't heard much of any update regarding Venezuela, and I wondered if you happen to have any input on what's going on there.
The situation in Venezuela is very, very dangerous right now. What is the current... Harry.
Well, it's very dangerous, but it's also very tragic. So, for instance, the Washington Post reports on a woman who had to sell her hair in order to get money to get by. Basically, the power has gone out on a consistent basis. There's an absence of clean water. And it's also important to note that the rest of the world is not focusing on the plight of Venezuela. The plight of Venezuela is extremely important to the American people, and it may indeed be important for the 2020 election. Why so? Because many Democrats are focused on the so-called Green New Deal. What is the Green New Deal? Essentially, it's Venezuelan socialism, which leads to human degradation and want. And so I think it's very, very important for the American people to be informed at what's going on in Venezuela, which
yep.
used to be one of the richest countries in Latin America, and it is now one of the poorest, and the economic slide continues unabated.
Carol Ann on Facebook said, the administration's tough foreign policy stance is what we need. Well done. Skip, what do you think the end result of this is going to be? What's the logical conclusion of this?
With respect to Venezuela?
Yeah, Venezuela and also, I mean, touch both Iran and Venezuela. I mean, Venezuela is in a very, a tumultuous situation right now.
Yeah, with respect to Venezuela, it's interesting. I think recently Secretary Pompeo mentioned the Monroe Doctrine again. So there's the idea that this is our hemisphere, and he's talking against the Russians sending in more power or the Chinese sending in people to Venezuela trying to prop up that regime. We already know that the Cubans are in there a great deal trying to prop up the regime, but that's the only thing that seems to be holding Venezuela up. I think the strong stance by the United States is making the rest of the world stand up and say, okay, we have the superior power in the world is taking action in its own interests, and we better, and they can injure us if we're not careful economically or in other ways. And therefore, I think President Trump, even though most of the world doesn't like him, they respect what he's doing. They respect and they realize they have to deal with him. And I think that's a major change on how they're dealing with the United States around the world.
All right. I think Skip's 100% correct. And I think the Iranians are in for a very rude and real awakening. There's no question that Mike Pompeo knows that this is going to have an impact. So I'm going to play what he said. This is number six, talking about the stability of markets.
I want to emphasize that we have used the highest possible care in our decision to ensure market stability. The United States has been in constant discussion with allies and partners to help them transition away from Iranian crude to other alternatives. And we've been working with major oil-producing countries to ensure the market has sufficient volume to minimize the impact on pricing. Both the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates have assured us they will ensure an appropriate supply for the markets. And, of course, the United States is now a significant producer as well.
I think that brings, Harry, some stability.
Well, I think
even if prices are going up, I mean, there's this 3% spike, not unexpected.
Not unexpected, but I also think it may fuel additional output, and that will have a long-term benefit. But I think it's very, very important to note the geopolitical benefits of placing additional pressure on this regime.
All right, so Jordan, tonight there's going to be on CNN a Democratic town hall. We only got a minute and 30 seconds here.
Yeah.
They're going to have all the major candidates.
Uh-huh.
Not all 20. What do you think you're going to say? They're going to all try to draw different positions, right?
I think CNN did this honestly. If you want my honest truth, because the initial town halls they did were always in last place.
Yes. And then Fox did the one with Bernie, and it was
no,
you.
And I think that they realized we just need to get all these done in one night.
Oh, you think it's to get it
yes.
up and get it one and done?
Yes. Yeah,
get it over.
On a week where people, I mean, let's be honest, we don't want to have to get into last week's news, but also Easter and all that. It's like, okay, do you think anyone is, of all weeks, this is the week you want to get people's attention? No. So get these done. Because people are, first of all, they start at, was it 6 p.m.? Something like that?
We have a lineup of who's who.
11 o'clock at night?
Prime time is
on
Bernie
Easter
Sanders.
Time. Yeah, of course, prime time. So I think they'll see that maybe they're jump up then, because people like kind of watching an old socialist say crazy things. So it'll jump up then.
You mean the Andy Economo of the broadcast?
Well, no, I mean, that's his shtick. You never know what's going to come out of his mouth. He's old and he says funny things. Like, your health insurance will be free at the time you use it, not before then. But when you use it, it'll be free. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I get that, Bernie. Like, you pay into something and then obviously, like, Medicare and stuff. You don't get charged at the time of use because I've been paying for it since before I needed it, since I was, 20-something years old. Or even younger than that, I've been paying for Medicare tax. So, again,
it'll be an interesting night.
But who's going to watch Mayor Pete at 11 p.m. Eastern time?
Pete's family? All right, that does it for the broadcast today. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Stay engaged with us on Facebook and social media, Instagram, and also don't forget to support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.